Welcome to the River of Calms Beyond the Music podcast. I'm your host, Ed Basil, and the River of Calm is music to soothe your soul. And on our Beyond the Music podcast, we give you a closer look at the artists who are on the River of Calm. And today in our studio, we have pianist and composer Dane Bryant. Dane, welcome.
Wonderful to be here.
Well, glad to have you here. What a treat, man. You have such a history we've got to talk about here. And first off, you have beautiful, obviously beautiful music that comes from a very healing soul. And I'm not just saying that to shine your shoes, but you were even a yoga teacher, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Briefly.
Briefly. Understandable. Well, our listeners are going to want to know about you. So let's back up and start from the beginning. Dane, how did you get started in music?
Well, I was just interested in my senior year in high school. I had a teacher who was kind enough to let me into the choir room after school and let me just, you know, pluck around on the piano with two fingers. And I had a lot of interest in it, in that I could try to figure out melodies with it and things like that.
That was your first time with a piano then?
Yeah, with a piano, yes.
Wow. No kidding.
I had toys growing up, you know, little toy organs, those little Magnus organs, if you remember growing up. But I think we even had a Thomas organ at some point in our house. It was just a passing thing. I never really had an interest.
So. Now, I've got to ask, where did you grow up?
Bristol, Virginia.
I think I read in your biography that you have ancestors who are really linked to music. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So my father, on my father's side of the family, who is from Bristol, he has these two uncles that played with Jimmy Rogers. And the historic recordings that were made in 1927, they were a part of.
And No kidding.
Yeah.
I just learned so much more about Jimmy Rogers on the Ken Burns documentary on country music.
Oh, yeah.
So your uncles were there?
They were there. So they were known as the Jimmy Rogers Entertainers.
Uh-huh.
And then during those recordings, they had a parting of the ways. And so Jack and Claude Grant were their names. So they decided to go on their own, and they formed the Tenniva Ramblers, which are on those historic recordings as well. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Rogers went on solo. And of course, we know history, what ended up with him.
No kidding. So you have lineage that's kind of anointed into famous, you know, country music history.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But you're not just although you grew up in Tennessee, you're not strictly a country guy.
No, all music, anything.
Okay, so back up, you're in high school.
Yep.
And you're plunking around on the piano. Was it because it felt good or you could get girls?
Both.
Okay, great. Glad to know.
The latter, probably.
Yeah, no kidding.
Don't we all?
Okay, so you started there. So how did you progress?
I just started figuring out these pop tunes that were on the radio and slowly figured out how a chord works. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the whole time the teacher was sitting in her office, and unbeknownst to me, she was listening the entire time.
Oh, really?
And she snuck in a cassette recorder one day near the end of the year and sent that cassette to James Madison University, unbeknownst to me.
What?
And I get a phone call from the head of the music department telling me to come up for an audition. And I said, you got the wrong guy. I don't know who you're talking about.
No kidding. Wow. Now, did you know how to read music then?
No, I was way behind. I was behind everyone else there. It was a challenge.
Oh my, that must have been scary.
Yeah, very. It was daunting. All these kids were playing these Rachmaninoff concertos. I could barely eke out a Bach invention, you know, a two-part invention. So I was way behind. And they were sight reading. And for me, it was just really hard.
Oh my gosh. Now, back in this time, did you dream of being a musician, or what did you want to do when you grew up?
I wanted to be in the high-tech field like my mom and dad. They were early on. My mom worked for Sperry Univac, so she was in computers way early on, as was my dad was in the field of communications. And so I was thought I was destined to go down that route. You know?
But you really surprised them, said, I'm going to be a musician. Was that how
that
this worked?
That surprised me, yeah.
No kidding.
It still does.
So you went to university and you studied music. Mm-hmm. Then what happened?
Then after that, I decided, I had a girlfriend at the time who said, you know, I think you ought to really consider a backup plan, a safety net. And so I quit music for a little while to pursue my MBA. Mm-hmm. And I realized during that time that I just couldn't stand it anymore and I wanted to play music. So wow. I had to make that difficult decision of letting go of the MBA and the girlfriend.
Ouch. Wow. But look how you flourished after this. Now, I take it at James Madison, you learned how to read music.
Partly, yes. Mm-hmm. I learned how to fake my way through it.
Yeah, but look at you. Now, if we could fast forward to now, you're a studio musician. Mm-hmm. So you have to know how to read music.
Yes.
But
or fake it well.
There yes. you go. Okay, so you dump the girlfriend, you go into music. Were you in bands or were you solo or what did you do?
Both. I played a little bit in piano bars. That was a good lesson. Mm-hmm. And learning tunes. Mm-hmm. And then also I did play in several bands and that was a lot of fun. We got ourselves through college actually through that. And then afterwards I played in several bands.
Nice. And did you finally move to Nashville or where did you move to? Or?
Well, I had gotten married. We had two kids in Richmond, Virginia, is where I was living. And mm-hmm. then we decided to move to Nashville because all my other friends were doing really well. So mm-hmm. We moved in 1991.
Wow, you're like one of the original settlers compared to now.
Yeah, I know, really.
No kidding. Wow, I think I got here in 95.
Yeah, well, yeah. You are too.
Yeah, wow. So you came to Nashville with the hopes of being a studio musician or just continuing in bands? Or?
Any gig I could get to mm-hmm. support my family.
If they've got the dough, you've got the show. Is that the theory?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow. Okay, and so it progresses. And how did you, then you started working with name artist.
Yeah. Well, what I first started doing was playing locally and mm-hmm. networking. And my friends, the Wooten brothers, mm-hmm. Victor Wooten, Reggie Wooten, and all mm-hmm. them, I was gigging with them. And of course, they're very popular.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, you know, got the eye of other folks in town. And so mm-hmm. I got a phone call from a guy who said, you know, why don't you come audition for Ricky Skaggs? Mm-hmm. And I did. And then I got another phone call. Why don't you come audition for Tanya Tucker? Well, mm-hmm. at that time, Tanya was paying a lot more than Ricky was. So mm-hmm. I went with Tanya.
No
and that
kidding.
Was my first name artist gig.
How did that feel?
It was never boring.
Okay. There sounds like a lot of stories behind that.
There are some stories. Of course, everything you hear about her is probably true. But I will say this for her is that she's probably one of the most kind-hearted, generous people I've ever met in this business.
Well said. I'm glad you said that.
It's true.
Nice.
True. Yeah.
So how long did you play with her?
4 months.
Okay. So a long career with Tanya.
Yeah.
Huh?
A lifetime friendship.
Jeez. No kidding. Where'd you go after her? Or why did you leave?
Well, I got the phone call from Clint Black.
And, oh, well, there's that, huh?
And then I didn't know who he was at the time because I wasn't really integrated into the business, and his career was really taking off.
Mm-hmm.
I got the phone call from his management, and they didn't even bother with an audition. They said they flew their music director and their management out to a Tanya gig, actually, in Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
and then they offered me a deal I couldn't believe. Mm-hmm. And
you have two kids, and you're married, and you need to bring home the bacon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at that time, that ended up being a 20-year journey with him.
Wow, 20 years.
Yeah.
Good gosh. Yeah. Did you play big arenas?
We did it all. Yeah, we played huge arenas. We played fairs and, mm-hmm. you know, outdoor concerts. And we traveled everywhere. It was a very, very good experience.
You know? Now, were you there as the keyboard player or did you become a musical director? Or?
The keyboard player.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and he spoiled us. It was the rock and roll life. He really took good care of us.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So 20 years, that's a great career.
Yeah.
Wow. And what happened after Clint?
Well, during that time, it overlapped. So Clint, and this is the generosity of him. He took such good care of us. There was one point where we took a 2-year hiatus and he wanted to keep us on. So he literally kept us on financially for those 2 years. He said, I want you to go home and raise your babies and not worry about money. And you just don't hear stuff like that these days.
Wow.
That's the kind of person he is. And so while he did that, I, of course, got another offer to go with Olivia. She was starting back her career again. She had quit for a long time because she couldn't sing for the longest
time. And Olivia being Olivia Newton-John.
Yes, Olivia Newton-John.
Okay. I'm not on a first name basis with her like you. Yeah.
So those two gigs basically overlapped over the years because they shared the same management, so it worked out perfectly. And
oh, that's handy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it worked out pretty good scheduling wise. So
now with Olivia, you came in as keyboard player.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Came in as keyboard player. I also did various other gigs with there's an acapella group called Take Six.
Totally cool.
Jazz mm-hmm. group. Went out with Little Texas for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Diamond Rio.
Mm-hmm.
Who else? There were some other groups. I was kind of like the sub or stunt guy. You know, if one of the guys was having a baby, mm-hmm. they would bring me in and I would help out.
Was there a lot of pressure?
Not really. Those guys are so good. You know, both Little Texas and Diamond Rio, all those folks, mm-hmm. you know, they're one of us, and you know mm-hmm. they weren't worried about it in the least. Of course, I put pressure on myself to make sure I didn't make mistakes, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. So now with Olivia, how long were you with her, or have you been with her?
20 years with her now. So
wow, yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
So. And you are the musical director.
I am. I have been for 5 years now.
Well, do you like that?
Love it. I mean, it's a challenge, but I love the challenge. And I have the best band. You know, they're just... those guys, incredible musicians.
Nice. Yeah. Now, but when you were growing up, let's go back a bit. Mm-hmm. Who were your influences when you were learning this whole process?
Oh, gosh. I kind of like groups that most of my friends didn't like. You know, mm-hmm. they were into the rock and roll thing. And mm-hmm. the only rock and roll I really liked was like Yes and mm-hmm. Kansas and mm-hmm. Folks like that. But I also prefer like Earth, Wind, and Fire and, you know, all that stuff, you know.
Oh, I still say I am the missing link of Earth, Wind, and Fire. Oh, they don't know it yet.
But yeah, I know. I'm waiting for that documentary to come out.
Well, oh, wow.
You know, that's going to be good.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. Cool. So, but you're all these for 40 plus years, you're playing for somebody else or you're playing mm-hmm. their songs.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a calling to play your own?
I've had people call me to play my own, but mm-hmm. Calling, not so much. I mean, I love to compose and if it's of service or help to others, you know, like with, especially with your project
mm-hmm.
and with River of Calm, you know, these songs help people and that's just part of me wanting to pay it forward. You know, in what we do.
It's very, your music is very healing, and we'll be playing it, you know, in the intro at the exit, and also we're going to play your favorite song in the middle of this somewhere too. So, but yeah, your music, it's very thoughtfully healing would be the way to put it. Tell me about your writing process. Do you just get up and say, oh, here's a song, or does it take a while, or...
You know, oddly enough, I think this is because of the years of playing in the studio. You're always under the gun to, it has to be an instant recall of, mm-hmm. of something and or instant pulling out of the hat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, generally, I rarely sit on something for very long. Usually, it'll come either in a dream, a melody, if I can remember it when I wake up, mm-hmm. or... it just the melody will come to me when I'm driving or meditating or mm-hmm. whatever. Or if I just sit at the piano, I'm thinking, wonder how this would sound. And then, mm-hmm. you know, you just kind of have to develop it or sculpt it a little bit, tweak it.
Now, when you're at that point, you're at the piano or a keyboard and you have a melody of some type, do you record a scratch vocal on Logic Pro or on your phone or I forget instantly.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that's what a great point. So yeah, I'll, you know, do it into the phone, do a memo, a voice memo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But generally I don't forget those melodies. Unfortunately, what I do forget is I'll be listening to a record and I'm thinking, that guy stole my lick. And then the artist will look at me like I'm an idiot and go, that's you. You played on it, you know, because I forgot I played on it. But
oh,
part of that is that when you do this for a living, you can't really attach yourself to every project. If you did, you'd just go absolutely crazy. So I had to learn over the years, you know, to be dedicated 100% for those 3 minutes in that song and just let it go after that. Otherwise, your hard drive will get full and drive you crazy. So
no kidding.
Sometimes I'll go back and listen to something. I'll think, man, that guy stole my lick or stole my sound, or, you know, and not realize that I played on it. Forgot about it.
Now, do you walk around, literally, you're driving to the grocery store. Do you have music in your head?
Unfortunately, yes. Mm-hmm. It's all the time. It doesn't mm-hmm. go away. It's hard to take a break from it. That can be a blessing and a curse.
I hear you on that.
You know.
Now, for yourself, you have a CD out so far, correct?
Mm-hmm.
We play that on the River of Calm, and there's some beautiful songs. And Kaleo Aloha?
Yes, that's very good. It's close. It's Kale Aloha.
Kale Aloha. Mm-hmm. And that is a, tell me about that song.
So that is an ancient Hawaiian chant, and mm-hmm. it is basically a call to ancestors, or it's a tribute to ancestors mm-hmm. and guidance.
And it says, I'm healthy, I'm here. Is mm-hmm. that what the lyrics
yeah.
said?
Yeah.
And then you're part of the Johnson City Hawaiian clan. Is that right?
Well, I know a few other Hawaiians there. Uh-huh. They're everywhere, oddly.
Uh-huh.
But in Hawaii, it seems like. But yeah, they're everywhere.
Nice. Now, is there a favorite song of yours?
You know, there's one that it's called La Bandada, which is actually a Spanish term.
Mm-hmm.
And it the term that it's used for, there are several different meanings for it if you Google it. But one of the meanings is a flower. And that one in particular has no tonal center to it.
Hmm.
And it tends to be a circle. So mm-hmm. it continues to cycle. And of course, when you have something like that, you got to figure out a way to end the song, which is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But it has, by not having a tonal center, it still has a linear movement, but it's cyclical, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very interesting, it's not any, the melody nor the chord progression is predictable at all, but it is, it just kind of sets your brain in a different place.
Well, know? Let's set our brain in a different place and listen to La okay. Bandada. Bandada.
La Bandada, yeah.
I'm getting there.
It's actually, it also means flight of birds. And so that's what influenced me was it was a flight of birds.
Cool. Here we go. And there we have it, The Flight of Birds, or La Bandada, from Dane Bryant. Very cool. Nice work.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So where can we find your music? Do you have a website or anything?
I do. And I do need to go on there and make sure that it is downloadable or streamable. Mm-hmm. I do have a website. It's danebryantmusic.com.
Mm-hmm. DaneBryant music.com.
Yep. Music.com. Yes.
Got it. And I noticed on there all the albums you played on.
Mm-hmm.
How many?
I've been blessed.
Yeah, I'll say we're actually in Dane's studio, and he has a B3 organ that was given to him by B.B. King. I mean, come on now. Dang. Yeah. So you have been blessed, definitely, but I think you deserve it. Now, what are you musically most proud of in your, from plunking the piano in Johnson City to today? What is the one thing you're most musically proud of?
You know, that's a tough one. I never think about that because I'm always looking ahead, you know, and for the next thing. I guess the one that I'm probably have the best memory of is a band we had called Secrets,
mm-hmm.
Which was in Richmond, Virginia, and that had members of like the Dave Matthews Band.
Oh, wow.
Came out of that band. One of the guitar players plays in Chicago, has been with them for 20 years.
Nice.
So everybody's kind of moved on to other things, but it was like an incubatory period, mm-hmm. an incubation of us growing musically. But there was something really special about that band that we pushed each other every night musically, and we went places that I've never had that experience like that before.
Wow.
Or since then.
No kidding.
Yeah, musically it was just... it was phenomenal. Every night was like that. We would forget to take breaks. We would be so far into it, we didn't realize the night was over.
Wow.
So it was...
Any tracks? Have you recorded anything?
Yeah, we have several albums. Of course, the hardcore Dave Matthews fans know about this band. It was called Secrets. And they actually have some bootleg recordings, which I didn't even know existed. And I've been sent some of those recordings, oddly enough, board tapes and things like that. We did have the pleasure of opening for Miles Davis right before he passed away. We opened for...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Whoa.
That was a big deal.
Yeah.
Ramsey Lewis. You know, there's a number of jazz bands that we got to hobnob with, you know.
Wow. And that was in Richmond.
That was in Richmond, yeah.
Jeez. So yeah, you had some good seasoning there. That was incubation there.
Yeah. Good schooling.
Wow. Now... what, you know, you've got a big presence musically. You've been, as you say, blessed. But what's one thing that our listeners or that wouldn't know about the musical Dane Bryant?
Wow, that's hard to say. I don't know. You know, we've talked about earlier about mm-hmm. there's just so many things going on, and I guess that's a blessing and a curse to, you know, to have your brain bounce in all these different places musically. But I just love all music. There's not a particular... I don't categorize it. I just know that if it comes from an honest place, to me, that I find that more appealing than anything else.
Wow.
As far as any part of work I do, everything that I do, I try to do with feeling and with honesty mm-hmm. and being true.
Wow. That's...
try.
That's a tough thing, you know, to put yourself out there on the line.
Yeah.
And especially when you're doing solo piano work too.
Yep.
It's kind of being naked and afraid. There's no hiding, basically.
That's right.
Wow.
Under the microscope.
No kidding. So if you could wave a wand and had one musical wish. No, not a wish, not for the, you know, family and your kids to be safe and healthy, which mm-hmm. we want, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Musically, if we could wave a wand, you could have one musical wish, what would it be?
Oh, I would love to have one of my compositions played by the Royal Philharmonic, and I can just stand up there and direct. That would be a bucket list dream.
Yeah. No kidding.
I would love that.
No, see, I thought you were going to say you were going to play with Earth, Wind, and Fire. But wow, the Philharmonic, that would be really cool.
That to me would be, I will say, you know, you asked earlier about something that was big, and something just popped across my mm-hmm. mind. One of the biggest things that I can recall now, and I didn't know it was happening at the time, but I used to carry that piano that you see in there. Mm-hmm. I used to carry on the road with me. I toured with it, actually.
Wow.
And we had it down to where we would tune it twice a day, and it did sound good live. Mm-hmm. And we were playing an inaugural ball for one of our presidents years ago, and Van Cliburn was the guest pianist before us, so he was going to come up and do a rendition of America the Beautiful, and then we would go on. I was
oh
with Clint
my
Black.
Gosh.
So every day we would have a sound check where I would go in first and play the piano by myself, and mm-hmm. the sound engineer would, you know, adjust everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the room is generally empty. Well, that day there were people milling around. There was Secret Service, of course, mm-hmm. sweeping. And there was a couple people sitting there. I noticed an elderly gentleman, another lady with him and everything. They were just sitting there talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I played for about 30 minutes in order to, you know. Well, the next thing I know, and there's the piano. There was a 9-foot Steinway off to the side that he was going to play.
Mm-hmm.
I get a note from his management before dinner that Van Cliburn, was asking permission to play my piano because he liked my piano better than the Steinway they provided him.
No way. Serious.
And I said, well, yeah, of course. And, you know, what's running through my head was, if you remember the piano competition he did in Russia, the was it the Rachmaninoff competition that he won? He's the first American to win.
Right.
You know, and then all these other accolades he had.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, my gosh. And I didn't get a chance to meet him. I said, yeah, so he can play my piano if I can get to meet him, you know. And so we were setting that up. And of course, right at that time, Secret Service came through and I couldn't meet him. And then he had to go on and play. But I did get to watch him play his rendition of America the Beautiful on that very piano.
On that piano just next door to where we're sitting right now. Wow.
So that to me is the biggest.
That's
deal.
Pretty. You had me at Miles Davis. But wow, that is really
but for
cool.
him to ask permission to play my piano was just that just blew my mind.
Yeah,
I just
well,
couldn't believe it.
We could probably do that. Nice.
I didn't think he'd ever play a Yamaha at that, but he did.
Hey, but that's a beautiful Yamaha you have too.
As you well know.
Absolutely. Now, if you had one billboard message that we could post and plaster across the country, what would you say in that billboard?
Be still.
Be still. Wow. Be still in your mind?
Be still in everything. But yes, especially your mind.
Yeah. Wow. You're deeper than I thought. Yeah.
Thank you.
That and it comes through in your music. It really does. And this is just really cool. Man. It's been a pleasure getting to know you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate it.
And there you have it, a behind-the-scenes look at pianist and composer Dane Bryant on the River of Calm's Beyond the Music podcast. I'm your host, Ed Basil. The River of Calm is music to soothe your soul. And may the calm be with you.